WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell a story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome, good evening, and hope you have had a happy 4th of July Independence Day. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will be your guide up until 8 p.m. this evening. We have a great show lined up for you and some fantastic guests, some good talking points. Most of the program will focus on Independence Day, July 4th, our freedoms, our liberties as a country, as a people, as a culture. And so we have some special guests to join us and talk about that. We'll kick things off right after traffic in just a couple of moments. State Rep. Matt Muratori joins us as we have the return of the State House report. We'll chat with him about what's going on with the FY 2022 budget. I believe it's in conference committee. And we know that's part of the process right now before it moves forward. I mean, eventually it's going to get signed into law by the governor. Whether there's any amendments or anything to take place, we'll find out in the coming days, but we'll chat with him about it. Also, we'll ask the representative, what's going on in his great district, talk with him about the Independence Day, the weekend, or what he is enjoying this summer in his neck of the woods. Following the state rep, we will speak with Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald. Over the past few years, I have made it a staple of the program that usually takes place around the 4th of July, and to talk a little bit about the meaning of Independence Day. Is it really 4th of July? Is that when the very famous document, the Declaration of Independence, was signed? Or were there other events? And also maybe some historical facts around this date in history. Of course, Joe McDonald is a historian himself, other than being an elected official as Plymouth County Sheriff. We'll tap him and talk to him about July 4th, Independence Day, etc. Hour number two, we will speak with Brockton City Councilor, Council President, Wynn Falwell, and we'll touch base with him on a couple of different things. A, what was the budget process like for the city of Brockton? Get his take on the city. Here we are cruising into the summer. Some of the things that he's looking forward to, and just kind of catch up with him as to some of the things going on in the great city. As you may know, there's been a little bit of a revitalization in the downtown area. We'll catch up with him and see where things stand when it comes to economic development in the city of Champions. And then we'll close things out with old friend Dan Pallotta, a former Plymouth County commissioner, a guy who he loves talking civics, he loves talking about government, whether it's Plymouth County government, state government, federal government. We'll chat with him about that. We'll talk about our freedoms as a people. Are we free? How are things politically? Are they free? Are they not so free as to how we deal and how the inner workings of our governments? So we'll look forward to talking with him about that. But right now, it's time for us to find out what's happening out on the roadways. It is being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshop.com. As you know, there are locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now in Hudson, New Hampshire.
Well, thanks, Kevin. Route 3 North, heavy pockets of congestion from Route 14 to Route 18. And along the way, a crash over in the shoulder at Route 139. Route 28 North is tough from Waterhouse Road up into the Bourne Rotary. Route 6 West is jammed from Chase Road up over the Sagamore Bridge. The expressway northbound is still an easy ride from Braintree to Boston, up about 9 minutes there. 495 North, spotty delays from Route 105 to Route 24. This report is sponsored by upsjobs.com. Want a job that gets you more? Join UPS. Warehouse workers earn more than $24 per hour after bonuses. Apply now at upsjobs.com/Shrewsbury. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. So Route 95, 93, and 495 all lead to tax-free New Hampshire. Oh, and don't forget Route 3 North. This is the direction you want to head towards Brennan Smoke Shop, Hudson, New Hampshire. Yep, Route 3 North, exit 88, the last off-ramp in Taxachusetts. You get off the exit, head towards the Merrimack River, over the river and through the woods on Route 3A North we go to Brennan Smoke Shop in tax-free Hudson, New Hampshire. Brennan Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required. So what you're saying is it's very interesting that the tobacco consumers in Massachusetts paid for the roads that take them to tax-free Hudson, New Hampshire. Did you like that? That's good. Over the river and through the woods to Brennan Smoke Shop we go.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
So I know we've modified the first segment of Monday Night Talk. Now, traditionally, I usually try to have it where it is the State House report. But, you know, I want to say I've expanded it a little bit. There's more of a county outlook, or if there's something legislatively that needs to be discussed, maybe I go into different areas. But we returned for the Independence Day holiday extension, because it fell on a Sunday this year. Spills over into Monday. Joining us for the State House report is a gentleman who represents the 1st Plymouth District in the House of Representatives, Matt Muratori. Representative, how are you, sir?
I'm really good, Kevin. Yourself? Happy 5th of July.
Happy? Well, folks are going to, as I teased in my opening, we have an annual tradition. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, Rep. Muratori, but I make sure that I have a little history lesson, a civics lesson, with Sheriff Joe McDonald. And we talk about, we all say, what are you doing for the 4th of July? And, you know, Independence Day is technically, they actually signed the document not on July 4th. We'll get into that with the sheriff, but it's interesting that people have different connotations as to, the day that we gained our freedom and our liberty. How has your holiday been? And talk to me about the meaning of Independence Day to you.
Well, first of all, the sheriff is one of the best historians you can ever talk to. The things that man knows, it's unbelievable. I've learned so much from him. So, it's really great. Independence Day is, it's about our freedom. It's about our freedom. And when you go to other countries and you see how other countries live, and you come back here and you kiss the ground here in America, and we're just so blessed, but I think we take it for granted so much. And, having this long weekend is really to remember, not about fireworks and cookouts. It's about, where we were, where we are now. And Plymouth has a little history of that as well, with with the Pilgrims landing in 1620. And, a lot of people say the documents that were signed, 200 and something years ago were, really originated from the Pilgrims landing in Plymouth too. So there's a lot of history here in Plymouth with Independence Day as well.
Yeah, we're at that time of year that when we talk legislatively, when we talk fiscally, we should be right now on our way to the budget, fiscal 2022. Usually that bill is signed into law, all the work that is done by first the governor putting out his version, the House working on theirs, and then the Senate, and then, you know, the conference committee. It seems like for yet a consecutive year, although albeit we had COVID last year and it kind of pushed things off, we still await an actual budget for, even though I know that there's something in place, until that is agreed upon, voted on, signed by the governor, we are waiting for the actual fiscal 22 budget.
Yeah, and you know, this is my fourth term, and I'm not sure if I can recall that we've ever had it signed by July 1st since I've been in office. It has in the past, though. Majority of the country do have budgets in place at this point. I think 25 or 30 states without the United States actually have their budgets already in place. For some reason, though, as you indicated, you know, the governor gives his budget in January. The House Ways and Means, which I was just appointed to this year, begins their budget hearings early March. The House actually then debates it the last week of April. The Senate debates it the third week of May. And then it goes to conference committee. And that's where it seems to get held up a lot, is in within conference committee. We did pass a 1/12 budget last week in the House and the Senate. So they budget for at least for the month of July. It's over $5 billion. I do believe, though, we are getting close with a conference committee, from what I understand. Hopefully this coming week we'll be in session and we'll be able to vote on that. If not this week, maybe next week, but it is coming close. But I think there's a lot of differences between the House and the Senate in leadership over the past several years. Different thinking, different way of doing things. And I think that's a lot of the reasons why we haven't been able to get a budget on time to the governor.
Is it just philosophies? Because, you know, the state, you know, when we look at the state government, except for our governor, you know, is you have a majority of one party, you have party majority in both House, in the House and the Senate. How can there be any, you know, you would think that there'd be a little a symbiotic relationship, or at least, you know, philosophically, that you'd be all on somewhat the same page, no?
Yeah, you would think so, but you know, even in the Republican Party, there's different sides to issues, and sometimes big differences. Same on the Democratic side, they have different philosophies. You got the progressive side, you got the liberal side, and the moderate side. And when you put all those mixes together, it's you know, everyone is thinks their ideas are the best. And but I think how we differ from Washington is eventually we do come to a conclusion that not one side has to win, that everyone knows that the winners really need to be the citizens of the Commonwealth, and eventually cooler heads prevail and we do end up getting a compromise.
Now, do you hear how the process of how all the wrinkles are ironed out in the legislation and putting forth the budget? Do you hear it while it's ongoing, percolating in dribs and drabs, or do you only hear it after the fact?
Yeah, a little bit here and there. I mean, the conference committees are you know, I don't want to say secretive, but they keep things close to the vest of what they're working on, because they're delicate negotiations that go back and forth between the six folks that are on the committee. There are four Democrats and two Republicans that are on that conference committee, and three are from the House and three are from the Senate. So, you know, and they have to go back to their leaderships on certain areas. And there is a lot of compromise in a lot of areas where there was some differences, but there's still a little bit of holdups. I'm not sure exactly what the holdups are at this point, but there are some that are different philosophies between the House and the Senate, but I hope they get wrinkled out this week or next.
You're just tuning in. We are speaking with the State Representative Matt Muratori, a part of the State House report that we have here traditionally on Monday Night Talk, been a staple of this program. We're going on almost 10 years. I believe next year we are celebrating our 10-year anniversary of being this version of Monday Night Talk. I'm sure if you ask a former state senator, now mayor of Weymouth, you know, the original way that we did Monday Night Talk was probably the best. But, you know, I don't have the institute. I don't have the memory or the bandwidth that Mayor Hedlund has. And let's not forget, for 20 years, he was the guy who he was involved with a lot of the bills and the laws and a lot of the discussions and the debates and, you know, the caucusing in a phone booth because you didn't have enough Republicans in the Senate. He, you know, all the great stories and a great memory. Me, I'd rather have it where it's kind of segmented, and I feel that it's worked best over the past 10 years.
Well, you've done a terrific job over the last 10 years, Kevin. And I appreciate all you've brought to, you know, to the South Shore, giving, you know, true, accurate information to people. It's very much appreciated.
Yeah, and I try to get all sides of the story. And a lot of people go, "Oh, there's two sides." Depends on who you ask. You know, I think there can be multiple sides. I think we all see things in a certain way, and you want to try to be as well representative of that as possible. Sometimes it can get out of hand, and somebody else has their own version, and it's up to the fourth and fifth. You're like, okay, I think we can kind of figure it out with a handful here. You know, here we are. You know, when we do a little compare and contrast, you know, we've embarked on the summer of 2021, and it is way different than 2020. How has your summer been so far, and how are things in your district?
Summer has been terrific. Of course, we had, you know, somewhat of a rainy weekend, but for the most part, the folks in Plymouth, the shops and the restaurants and stores, and are having a fantastic year. Beginning of last week, I went on a tour of businesses with our newest state rep, Rep Exaros from Sandwich, who has one precinct in Plymouth. And we toured a number of businesses in Plymouth for the day. And every single business we went to, best year ever so far. And then the summer is just getting started. Now, with that said, one of the biggest issues, the biggest issue they're having is actually is trying to get help. And that's everywhere. That's in every industry. But, you know, the restaurants, the shops, the tours, they're starting to limit hours, limit days, limit seating because of the help situation. And but even with that in place, it's just a fantastic year here in Plymouth. I think you and I have talked about this before, Kevin. I think a lot of it has to do with the fantastic job that the Plymouth 400, Michelle Pecorau, Ken Tavares, and that whole group, Terry Murray, have done over the last decade of really promoting Plymouth and the events that were going to be happening in 2020. Unfortunately, a lot of those events didn't happen, but I mean, there was such a buildup to Plymouth that I think people are, you know, coming out of this pandemic and saying, hey, what's this Plymouth all about? People have never been here before. I was talking with Lee Filson from See Plymouth a couple of weeks ago, and we've seen everyone so far by mid-June from every state in the country except for Alaska and Hawaii. And that's usually unheard of. Of course, we're not seeing international visitors at this point. That's going to be a little ways off, but it's unbelievable the people that we're seeing in Plymouth.
I hate to ask you this, but I must. You know, I think Massachusetts stands in head and shoulders above the other states in the union, in the country, when it has come to mobilizing folks to get out and get vaccinated. And, you know, I think, again, we've noticed the numbers have really, they've been down. But knowing that we have a Delta variant, and who knows if this isn't going to spin off to an Echo or a Foxtrot or whatever, however they're naming them. What are your concerns that, you know, we're seeing this terrific rebound in, you know, folks getting out, tourism in Plymouth, which is amazing. If you haven't seen Plymouth, get out. There's so many hidden jewels. There's some that are right there, you know, in the downtown area of Plymouth, but there's so much to see and do in Plymouth. Are you concerned that this could be something that rears its head later this summer or later this year?
Yeah, no, I'm really not. You know, as a healthcare person, you know, I watch this, these numbers, I watch this, these trends a lot. I think as a country, we've done very well. I think President Biden, you know, wanted to get 70 million people vaccinated, whatever it was, by July 1st, but we're not that far off. Here in Massachusetts, we have 4.2 million people vaccinated. We really wanted to get to 4.1, so we're at 4.2, and it's still going. People are still getting vaccinated, not at the rates that they were before, but I think people are pretty good about the fact that they're not vaccinated, and they'll wear a mask. They'll be good about it. So I'm not really so concerned about it. Obviously, we need to keep an eye on it. I did hear, too, that there may not be any boosters that may be needed because the vaccines that we got were so good. So that will remain to be seen, but we'll take a look at that in the fall. But I'm not so much concerned about that.
We know that once they eventually do pass the state budget, that you kind of resort to informal sessions. What are some of the things that you'll try to do to stay busy and stay engaged with your district until the fall?
Well, one of the things that I'm back to doing again, which because of the pandemic was not able to do, is getting back out into the community. Like I mentioned, you know, being out and visiting the businesses and, you know, doing some I get teased a lot by my colleagues that I do more ribbon cuttings than anybody does. It's engaging with people. And that's what this business is all about. It's a business of building relationships, and you build relationships and coalitions, and that's how you get things done. So I'm really excited about the fact that I'll be able to get out in the community some more. See some folks they haven't seen in a while, get some big hugs from people, and really just really get out there and really help the community continue to grow.
Well, and what are you hearing from the community when they greet you, they see you? How do they feel that the state did overall when it came to getting us through the tough times of the pandemic?
Yeah, I've had a few people, Kevin, that have apologized. They were a little critical early on of what we were doing, what I was doing, what the governor was doing. But in the end, when they see how we have done as a Commonwealth compared to other states, you know, the way we did it, I think was the right way. I think I was, you know, one of a few legislators that really backed the governor the way he was doing this, particularly early on with giving the vaccines to people that were the most vulnerable people, particularly those in nursing homes, assisted livings, rest homes, group homes, et cetera. It took a while, and we were behind the eight ball with giving vaccines to people, and people were not understanding that. But those are the people that were dying the fastest, and those are the people we needed to save the most. And we did it, and the numbers started trending in the right direction, and we continued to do a good job. So, yeah, I think most people are very appreciative, whether they're independent, they're Republicans, Democrats, and whatever side of the aisle they're on. I think they're most appreciative of how the governor, lieutenant governor, handled this pandemic.
You had mentioned about the most vulnerable, especially when we're talking about our older population, whether they're they're, you know, in their own setting or if they are in a facility. Have you been, and I know it's probably an area that you specialize in, have you heard more and more that any organizations that are running nursing facilities or nursing homes are pushing for that the folks that they have working with those residents have to be vaccinated?
Yeah, it was actually just announced last week that the legacy homes in Massachusetts, I think they have six homes in Massachusetts, about 1,800 employees, have just announced that they are mandating their workers to be vaccinated. I believe 75% of their workforce is vaccinated, but they're demanding that the rest do. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. There's pros and cons to that. I understand why they're doing it. I recently was doing some consulting in a nursing home in New Bedford. And there are a lot of protections in place if you're not vaccinated as a worker to care for the residents, you know, with masks and the N95 masks and gowns and shields and all that. So there are protections if you're not vaccinated. You need to make sure you're geared up so you're not getting, you know, bringing any variants into the facilities to harm people. So you know, there's pros and cons. So we'll see how it all works out. I know the hospitals industry, a lot of the big hospitals are mandating it as well. They've done it with the flu shot in the past, and it seems to have worked. So we'll see how that works out.
And so as we close out this segment, then we'll do a couple of Monday Night Talk quick hits. So if you're in downtown Plymouth, right, are you going to gravitate towards something that's savory for a meal or a snack, or do you have a sweet tooth?
Not so much a sweet tooth, but I got to tell you, one of the places we hit that I hadn't been to before, there's a lot of great places in the waterfront in downtown, and, you know, Mamma Mia's and East Bay Grill and Cabby Shack and Anna's Harborside, there's a whole bunch, but there's one that we went to for the first time. A guy named Andrew opened this place called the Otterson Pig. It's right in downtown. He opened it in December during the pandemic. It's got, you know, pulled pork and some pizza, and it's a really simple type menu. Great atmosphere inside. You can see the water from the store. But that's one place I'm going to go back and actually, you know, bring my wife and some friends and check that out. But I was really excited to see that and see what he's done there.
And what would you say is your best vantage point in Plymouth that you love going to? You could go 100 times and it never gets old.
Yeah, I just think the whole waterfront area, you know, down by Mamma Mia's and Anna's, and you walk around down there, you walk up by the Mayflower and the Rock, and it's just, there's just tremendous views from all over. And, you know, when you do go to Town Hall, you get tremendous views of the whole waterfront, the top floor of Town Hall as well. So that probably has the best views in the whole landscape of Plymouth.
He is State Representative Matt Muratori, our guest here for the State House Report. A representative, as always, you and your colleagues, thank you so much for gravitating to this program and to this segment to kind of talk about everything that is important, not only in state government, but your district.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much.
We're going to step aside. When we come back, get ready for your history lesson about Independence Day. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Tom Baudet here, still leaving the light on for the long-haul trucker. While we were locked down at home, you were out there day and night bringing us what we needed to make it through. And Motel 6 is here to help you make it through. Want to trade a loose load strap and a sore back for a good night's sleep? Yes, you do. Motel 6 has a place just down the road with a clean, comfortable room and a great low rate. You'll know it when you see it. I'm Tom Baudet for Motel 6, and we'll leave the light on for you.
Jay Farner here, CEO of Rocket Mortgage and Rocket Companies. Last year, we saw historically low mortgage interest rates. What you may not know is that interest rates are already starting to increase, and it's likely that trend is only going to continue. Our team of experts is standing by to help you save before rates go up. Don't look back and wish that you had taken action. Call 833-8-ROCKET or visit rocketmortgage.com.
Rocket.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
Tiny of Tiny Sons Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield.
Ouch!
But good news, we can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny and Sons, Route 53 Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing the gimme gimme that ding.
So give me that ding. Tiny and Sons Glass will fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
That's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Give me that ding. That's nice.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Joining us for this segment is a gentleman who, you know him for his role in law enforcement here in the county, Plymouth County. But he's also a historian, and I like having a conversation with him on an annual basis. I want to say it was something that happened about 3, maybe 4 years ago by happenstance, where he's like, you know, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about Independence Day. And I go, July 4th? He goes, no, Independence Day. And so we have had a little bit of a history lesson, civics, to talk a little bit about the difference between the 4th of July, the holiday you know, and Independence Day. We have Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald joining us. Sheriff, thank you for yet again joining me for another history lesson about Independence Day.
Oh, Kevin, thank you for allowing me to come on and have the platform to remind people. Many people have heard us talk about this in the past and may remember, you know, some obscure facts from their history class back when. The 4th of July, and that's another thing that it's Independence Day. 4th of July is just a date, you know. At Christmas time, I'm not going to say to you, happy 25th of December. I'm going to say Merry Christmas, and that's just me. But, you know, Independence Day, to me, you know, it's in the pantheon of holidays, I think it is our most important one as a nation. And civically speaking, you know, it's important for us to think about it and to talk about it. You know, it's 245 years ago, a long time. This nation has existed, and we have been through trials, tribulations, good times, bad times, and we have survived. And I know a lot of people that I speak to now are you know, concerned about the divisions in politics and the challenges that we face as a nation. And the good news is, if you have studied history, you understand that we have seen times worse than this, and we have come through. So my faith is in this nation and in the people of this nation and in our leadership. And I'm happy to come on and share that.
So why do we mix the two up? Why are we so fixated on the 4th of July? Hey, it's the 4th of July holiday. Why is that?
Well, a lot of people may say it's just because, you know, we get a day off and we have some fun and shoot off fireworks and have bonfires and things like that. And that's probably true. The backyard barbecue is a big popular thing. But, you know, historically, what was going on in 1776, the Second Continental Congress meeting at Philadelphia on July 2nd, actually, and this is why most historians will tell you that Independence Day is actually the 2nd of July. The resolution, it was known as the Lee Resolution for independence from Great Britain. Richard Henry Lee of Virginia put forward that proposal, and it was voted upon and ratified by Congress that we would declare our independence from Great Britain, no longer being colonies, but an independent nation on July 2nd of 1776. So if you ask the question, and people always do, when you see the document itself, it says very clearly on top, in Congress, July 4th. And the reason is that, you know, several days, Thomas Jefferson actually wrote that document essentially by himself, but did get some editorial assistance from mostly from John Adams and from Benjamin Franklin. But that document is very largely Thomas Jefferson's creation. And they needed time to get a clean copy written up so that they could have something upon which to place their signatures. So July 2nd is the actual day, even though the document is dated July 4th. That's when that document was prepared. And most historians agree that it wasn't really signed, even by John Hancock, who was the president of that Second Continental Congress, and by many historians gauge the first president of the United States, John Hancock, wasn't really signed until August 2nd. And the British didn't find out about that resolution until about August 30th of that year, 1776. So it's interesting. Eventually, 56 delegates signed that. And again, the very first one was John Hancock placing his, and you know, we use this colloquial expression now, placed his John Hancock right in the middle of the signature part there. And that signature is very famous. People can identify that. So it's a wonderful thing for us to remember and to commemorate. And my suggestion to the folks out there is this: don't simply celebrate the 4th of July, celebrate the 2nd of July, because that's a great thing too. You know, let's have a barbecue.
Interesting enough is that this time of year, whether it's the 2nd of July, 4th of July, a lot of historical facts have taken place. And you and I have shared those and talked about, you know, things that have occurred around this date.
Yeah, you know, it's great. If people are insisting, as I've said in the past on many occasions, you know, people will say to me, hey, happy 4th of July to you. And my response is always, you know, and happy Independence Day to you. You know, 4th of July is simply a date. But I do, you know, before we talk about some of those other things, I do want to read an excerpt from a letter. Now, it was very famous that John Adams and Abigail Adams exchanged letters during the period of time that John Adams was away. And Abigail Adams was absolutely brilliant. She, if you ever had an opportunity, I do know that there is a collection of their letters. It's called Dearest Friend. It's published as a book. If you ever get a chance, grab a copy of that. But here is what John Adams wrote to a letter, in a letter to Abigail on July 3rd of 1776. And I think it captures the spirit of this very, very well. And it reads as follows. The second day of July, 1776, will be the most memorable epoch in the history of America. I am apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other, from this time forward forevermore. I couldn't say it any better myself, and I think that really captures the spirit of what our Independence Day is all about, and I think it really captures describes very accurately 245 years ago how we celebrate today, which is a wonderful thing. You know, you also mentioned, you know, there are those folks who are going, no matter what we say, they're going to say Happy 4th of July. And 4th of July is, you know, if you insist on celebrating the 4th, there is reason, independent of our independence, to celebrate the 4th of July, not just the birth of this nation, but the rebirth or the saving of the nation. July 4th, you know, fast forwarding to 1863, Abraham Lincoln had a good July 4th weekend, I suggest, in that period of time, because two major things had happened. The first was the Union victory at Gettysburg. Gettysburg was July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of 1863, and the Southern invasion of the North by Robert E. Lee was repulsed and defeated by General Meade in the North. And even more significantly than that was July 4th of 1863 was the surrender, the capitulation of Vicksburg, Mississippi the Confederate general was Pemberton, and this was Ulysses Grant, who would later rise to overall command of the Union armies. But that is generally regarded, and I think is truly the turning point of the American Civil War. It split the Confederacy in half and saved this nation. So 1863.
Do you feel that that our society today realizes what it took for us to gain our freedom and for us to, you know, realize the importance of Independence Day?
You know, Kevin, I don't think so. I really don't think so. And I think this is a great opportunity for us to remind our listeners out there and our viewers out there that what our founding fathers, in particular the signatories on the Declaration of Independence, were doing was not simply founding a nation. They were committing an act of treason. They were essentially signing their own death warrant if we had lost the revolution and they were captured by British forces. They most likely would have been put to death as traitors. So by signing that document, they not only founded a nation, but in doing so risked their lives and really everything that they had. So my debt of gratitude to them is immeasurable. I like to think not just on the 4th of July or even the 2nd of July, but I think about the sacrifices of those that came before us. And, you know, that allows us to sit here and talk the way that we are. And I couldn't be more grateful.
I myself find history fascinating and all the little nuggets and things that are interconnecting somehow. Yeah. What makes you such a fan, a lover of history?
Oh, you know, Kevin, ever since I was a kid, traveling with my parents to various historical sites, being a kid during the bicentennial and realizing, you know, how perilously close we came to not being a nation, you know, to being a part of the British Commonwealth, really, sparked my interest. The history teachers I had growing up were all, by and large, outstanding, very good teachers. And I've learned, and I've since, when I have time, taught at at Quincy College here, I've taught history and loved it. I think the best story is the true story. You know, think about all the movies that have been made, and, you know, some of them stray a little bit from the history, but generally speaking, those are the best topics that we have. And there's so much irony in history and so many strange and coincidental things that have happened. You know, we talked a little bit too about, you know, people today, we lament the fact that we're very divided politically as a nation, and there seems to be a lot of acrimony. And this is not anything new. People that study history, as I say, have a faith that we'll get through this. This too shall pass. And they talk about, and I know you and I have talked about it in the past, about the friendship that later crumbled between those two individuals largely responsible for the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. And, you know, that's an interesting story as well.
If you will, please remind folks who don't remember our past conversations.
Sure, sure.
Please enlighten them.
Well, you know, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. Jefferson was a Virginian. He was a Southerner. And Adams was, you know, from Braintree. He was a Massachusetts guy. He was a Northerner. They had some different opinions on how a federal government should exist and coexist with the states. Adams was a strong proponent of a strong federal, centralized federal government. And Jefferson was more of a states' rights guy who thought that the federal government should exist, but should largely defer many things to the states. You also had a situation that arose, and the two were friends and colleagues in the founding. I mean, there's no two way about that. There was a great deal of affection. But that became very strained, and actually the friendship was broken for a period of time. Adams being our second president, and Thomas Jefferson, the way the vice presidents were selected at that time was different. So Jefferson served as Adams' vice president, and he was really horrified by the way that Adams exercised power. And those two, their friendship was broken for a period of time until 1812, when New Year's of 1812, when Adams reached out to Jefferson, and both had contacted third parties saying they wanted to be friendly again. But the ultimate irony here is that their friendship was renewed through correspondence. And fast forwarding 50 years later, 1826, on July 4th of all dates, both Thomas Jefferson and John Adams die. And what was really amazing about this, you know, they died as friends, which is amazing. And wonderful. But Adams' final words, and this is recorded by many individuals, Adams' final words as he passed away were, "Jefferson survives." And what Adams could not have known is that Jefferson died about 5 or 6 hours prior to him down in Virginia. So two men, founding fathers, friends, then opponents, and then friends again, die the same day, 50 years to the day of the Declaration of Independence. It's amazing stuff.
It's ironic, isn't it?
Yeah. And to me, you know, Jefferson survives. I think what Adams, he was older. Adams, he was 90 when he died. Jefferson was 82, I believe. So I think he had an expectation that Jefferson would outlive him. But I think really the significance to me that Jefferson survives means that Jefferson, in the document that was created, the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson survives, and Jefferson and Adams will continue to survive, embodied in the documents that they and others created to found this nation. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
I have to say, knowing that Jefferson was, and again, I'm just sharing, you know, a little history nugget. When I was down in D.C. Just a month ago, and we went by, and the person who was taking us through the different, you know, historical places and the monument or the what they have in honor of Jefferson, it's amazing that it was something that has, knowing that he was, you know, the author and helped, you know, put together the Declaration of Independence. You would have thought that something that would be the likeness of him would be better taken care of, and it would be more of a higher priority, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I'm troubled somewhat by the treatment that some of these historical sites receive or don't receive. We really, you know, I used to tell my history students that everything that's going to happen has already happened. Mm. And what I meant by that was, if you know history, you can oftentimes predict how events will unfold and prepare much better for those things. So it behooves us. It breaks my heart when I see any of these monuments destroyed anywhere, regardless of to whom they are erected. each one of them reflects the values and the mores of the time in which it was erected, and we can learn from all of those things. And we need to remember those things, you know, good and bad. We need to remember these things. And those people, you know, my grandfather used to say to me that a smart person will learn from his mistakes, but a really smart person will learn from other people's mistakes. And I think it's up to us to learn from the mistakes of the past so we don't make those in the future.
Sheriff, we've come to the closing moments of our conversation here. Anything, any further wisdom that you want to impart on our audience before we say goodbye for at least this particular segment?
Oh, I appreciate that, Kevin. I don't know how much wisdom I have to impart, but I do want to take a moment to thank you for, you know, keeping this alive and giving me the platform and sharing that platform with me as a student of history. And I would say that we're both students of history. I, to the extent that I retain some of what I read, I'm lucky that way, but I do love to talk about it. And usually people, some of whom I'm sure are just being polite, usually seem interested in some of the things that I have to say. So I appreciate it.
Well, and we thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You got it. He is Plymouth County Sheriff Joe McDonald, as we share a historical nugget about Independence Day, which some of you call 4th of July. Well, that does it for hour number one. Take a break for just a couple of moments. When we come back, up next, hour number two, as we speak with Brockton City Council President Wynn Falwell. He's on deck in just a moment. You're tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Plymouth 400 Inc. continues their mission of education and commemoration of the 400th anniversary of Plymouth's founding with a new television series called Plymouth 400 Conversations. The program will focus on authors, filmmakers, artists, and poets who discuss how the 400th anniversary commemoration influenced their work. Each episode premieres Thursday nights at 7:30 on PAC-TV, but available online for everyone to see the following day. Despite the pandemic, the 400th anniversary commemoration continues into 2021 with great virtual programming now, including this fascinating new virtual series, and live events later in the year. See what Plymouth 400 Inc. has scheduled. Shop for Plymouth 400 anniversary merchandise to share with friends and family, and catch the most recent episode of Plymouth 400 Conversations. Visit Plymouth400Inc.org.
Tom Baudet here, still leaving the light on for the long-haul trucker. While we were locked down at home, you were out there day and night bringing us what we needed to make it through. And Motel 6 is here to help you make it through. Want to trade a loose load strap and a sore back for a good night's sleep? Yes, you do. Motel 6 has a place just down the road with a clean, comfortable room and a great low rate. You'll know it when you see it. I'm Tom Baudet from Motel 6, and we'll leave the light on for you.
Jay Farner here, CEO of Rocket Mortgage and Rocket Companies. Last year, we saw historically low mortgage interest rates. What you may not know is that interest rates are already starting to increase, and it's likely that trend is only going to continue. Our team of experts is standing by to help you save before rates go up. Don't look back and wish that you had taken action. Call 833-8-ROCKET or visit rocketmortgage.com.
Rocket.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states and MLS ConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD. Town download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yes, it is hour number two. And joining us on this, the technical Independence Day holiday, Monday the 5th of July, we have City Council President, Brockton City Council President, Wynn Falwell, joining us. Councilor, how are you doing this good day, sir?
I'm doing well. I hope you and the family had a great holiday. Don't ask me where the month of June went. It seemed to fly by, and those hot days we went through, they were a bit taxing, but we've made it thus far.
Last time you and I had a conversation, the conversation, we talked about, you know, we were still in pandemic mode. How is it feeling? How are the folks in the City of Champions feeling that we are kind of cruising into post-pandemic life, at least for the foreseeable future?
Well, I think parents and school staff are really excited about hopefully getting back to normal, having the students back on campus, having the normal programs and services in the classroom, because you do lose so much being remote. It's just not the same not being in the classroom. I think the business community certainly is very pleased. The governor lifting the emergency restrictions. It almost seems strange now, Kevin, to walk into an establishment and actually see someone's entire face from the nose down. And I sometimes chuckle about that, because we did get so used to putting on a mask that now it's just taking a little while to adjust to having it off. So things are looking up. I hope we don't have an issue with variants. I know the World Health Organization and I think the CDC are cautioning that we always need to be vigilant as we go forward. But it just seems to be as though we have turned the proverbial corner, and we're looking at a much brighter future, both business-wise, personally, and certainly in terms of education for our kids.
When we look back a couple of months ago or prior, I mean, I feel that the City of Brockton was the one community here in the South Shore that had to, you know, while other communities were seeing a decline or decrease when it came to COVID numbers, Brockton would at times remain in that color-coded chart red, because they were, you know, it was taking a while to get the word out in regards to making sure you're wearing your mask, getting folks vaccinated. That was a big key. Do you feel as though that all the work that was done by city officials, especially when it came to vaccinating, was key to getting the city to where it is now?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, I mean, with leadership from the mayor's office, John Messia, Director of Constituent Services, the Health Equity Task Force, the assistance from the state, our legislative delegation, the National Guard coming up. I actually was vaccinated twice by National Guard members, setting up a vaccination center at the Shaw's Center on the west side of Brockton, as well as having mobile sites. There will always be some people who are not in favor of vaccination. I understand that. I regret it, because I think the best shot at maintaining this level of now green status in terms of the COVID virus is through vaccination. But yeah, I mean, we're light years ahead of where we were in March of 2020 when this was inflicted upon us.
Now, we get in the rearview mirror is my favorite time of year when it comes to city officials, when it comes to finances, when it comes to municipalities. And you had the chance to kind of lead the conversation as the council president. What was it like going through the budget process this time around and being the one with the gavel?
Well, unknown to a lot of people, the council president actually works with the auditor and others to set up the budget hearings and the schedule of which department will appear and what night. And I put a lot of time into that, because over four nights, there isn't a human being who doesn't suffer from what I call financial fatigue by the third and fourth night. So I went through all of the different budgets, and I tried to front load Monday night with the bigger budgets, the school, Southeastern Regional Schools, police, fire, and some others, so that we would be really sharp when we looked through those budgets, because they consume a great deal of needed revenue to operate. And then on the second and third night, it was a little less, shall we say, demanding in terms of the budget. Some of the smaller budgets came in and we were able to handle them. And then on the fourth night, we did have a virtual public hearing, and we had, I think it was 10 folks registered, 8 actually chose to speak by remote. And actually, it wasn't remote in the sense that you couldn't appear. You could send in emails, and you could obviously contact us. But if you wanted to come into City Hall itself, you had to pre-register, and then you were invited into the council chamber one at a time. And then when your speaking time was up, you had to leave. So I guess you'd call it a hybrid remote, in person if you wanted, by email or written statement if you didn't. And so that worked out pretty well. And then on Monday the 14th, the council got together and made some minor adjustments to the budget, but then it was passed. And so as of July 1st, we were able to continue to operate city government.
How do you feel this time around? Again, as you know, we're coming out of a pandemic. Do you feel that the city's financial health is on the upswing, or do you feel that it's same as it always is, that, you know, you look at where to cut and, you know, hopefully you don't have to lay anybody off?
Oh, I think we're in much better shape. And let's start with the federal government. We're going to get over 2 years, $35.6 million from that American emergency appropriation that the president withdrew. And then our legislative delegation did an absolutely fantastic job advocating for us so that we got a lot more state aid. I'm going to say unrestricted general government and Chapter 70 education aid. I think we've probably gotten approximately 24, 25 million. So we're on a trajectory now for a very successful fiscal year 2022. The schools are hiring 10 adjustment counselors, 7 guidance counselors. Curriculum is being upgraded. Intramural programs are coming back. After-school programs, summer programs. So I think if you put this into a package, what the schools tried to do, and I fully supported it, is make up for what has been lost when schools closed down in March of 2020. And you will never make it up to those students who have graduated, but to the students who have progressed to the next highest grade level, we're going to be in great shape in September to offer them the programs and services they need to be successful. We're maintaining our public safety strength. We're maintaining our other services in the city for fire, police, DPW, libraries. And actually, we're addressing some infrastructure improvements as well, water mains and roads reconstruction. So I'm really looking forward to fiscal year 2022. I think we're poised to have a very, very productive year.
You're tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, and our guest is Council President Brockton, City Council President Wynn Falwell. Worth noting that other than serving on the City Council, he also has been a mayor of Brockton, also serving on the school committee. And I don't think anybody can lay claim to being elected to those three particular parts of city government and having a role. And knowing again that you've how many years would you say that you've had your hand in being a part of the city's welfare? The betterment of the city.
Well, 10 years as mayor, I'd strike that, 10 years on the school committee, 4 years as mayor, and now I'm in my sixth year as a member of the city council. But actually, I have to tell you a better story than that, Kevin. I received the other day something that was found at City Hall. It was an old ballot from the city election of 1895. And on that ballot, it's the actual official ballot, and it was the one for Ward 7, where you would have councilors and aldermen run and school committee. And on that ballot was the name of my great-grandmother, Martha J. Farwell, who ran for the school committee, and she was elected for many terms and served. So I'm going to have it, I'm actually going to have it framed. I'm so touched by it.
I was going to ask you, that'd be a great idea, is to frame that. That's a piece of history.
Oh, yeah, and it's yellowed, and it's just got that patina, if you will, of age. And it's just kind of extraordinary to look at your great-grandmother's name on the ballot and say, wow. Now, she isn't the first one to serve in the city. It's actually my great-grandfather in 1859, when we were the town of North Bridgewater. He was an educator in the town of North Bridgewater. So since 1859, with some periods in between not covered, you know, the family has always believed in the city. And I, you know, to some people that may seem trite, but it's important to me.
I would say this, and, you know, service to your community, I think, is something that, you know, you've done a fantastic job as a community leader, as a stakeholder. And it's by no means, I don't feel that people realize that what kind of time is invested as someone who's elected to a board or somebody who wants to stay up on what's going on, whether it's a public safety campus or whether it's, you know, revitalizing the downtown corridor or just talking budget. It's a full-time job in itself. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, I would certainly say that if you do it right and you put the time in, it's a full-time job. What a lot of people don't realize is that we don't have a staff. In other words, I don't have a research assistant. I don't have an accountant I could turn to help with the budget. I don't have a secretary to send out correspondence. So we do all of that ourselves. We have a staff at City Hall in the city clerk's office that prepares the agenda and takes in documents and timestamps them and processes them as necessary. But if you think of Brockton as very close to a $500 million corporation,
right,
and then you think of 11 members of the board of directors, if you will, because no money is spent without us reviewing it and authorizing it, it's pretty extraordinary that we are not even considered part-time and we have no staff. And somehow we get it done. Now, I know jokingly some people will say, well, in my opinion, you don't get it done. But from where I sit and I watch the counselors, we get it done. And we research and we evaluate what's before us. And then we try to make the best possible decision.
So I would ask you this. You know, you had mentioned earlier about a great job that your legislative delegation was able to accomplish in getting money for the state budget. Interesting enough, you're going to be losing one of those individuals possibly as an ambassador to Ireland, Claire Cronin. What's your thoughts of yet another, you know, losing a Claire Cronin as part of the delegation?
Well, assuming that this happens, I am very happy for her because she certainly deserves it. She's not only a great legislator, but she's a great person. And I think that's why she rose very quickly through leadership in the Massachusetts House of Representatives. But you don't replace a Claire Cronin, because even though she lives in Easton, she was a Brockton gal. And she went to the Whitman Elementary School, as I did with, and as did the mayor. And she just has a grasp of what that town as well as Brockton needs. And of course, whoever replaces her will be very junior in seniority in the House of Representatives. So legislatively, that's a huge loss. But personally, it's something that she richly deserves.
Looking ahead, we know the summer months are usually quiet ones. But do we have anything percolating, anything that maybe folks who aren't necessarily Brocktonians or Brockton residents, but do we have any news or anything that's in the works or anything that you and I can kind of chat about that maybe folks don't realize that has been ongoing in the great city of Brockton?
Well, we are still proceeding with weekly and biweekly meetings on the proposed $98 million public safety complex, which will house four departments: police, fire, information technology, and Brockton Emergency Management. And, you know, there's the design of the building, there's the layout of the building, there's space allocation needs, all sorts of things that go together before you actually go out to bid on a project and make a decision as to where it will be located. We also have an interesting question that's been brought before the city council, and it's from a group in the city, and it's a non-binding referendum question that: should the school committee, the city council, and the mayor be instructed to vote to support certain things that this group wants? And it's kind of a unique approach to government. I mean, we're in a constitutional democracy where we elect people to office, and then those people exercise the judgment based on information presented, based on interaction with many different people, how best to vote on an issue. This group actually wants to get together and form their own group and then instruct us how to vote. And it's being labeled as non-binding, but Kevin, I can just see what would happen if this passes. Woe be the person who deviated from what the group wanted. They probably would be vilified as somehow turning their back on the community, even though that school committee member or counselor or even mayor, future mayor, might have a whole body of information that tells them this is what we need to do, even though it's opposed to that other group. And so that will be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, do you feel that this public safety campus is something that's going to resonate with voters in the fall, or is this, you know, do you feel that it's going to be a matter of where do you stand on this, or do you feel that it's progressed far enough that it's going to happen? It's just a matter of, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's.
It is going to happen. The funding has been approved. I hope people will see this as a positive for the city, because I think it will transform the downtown. It will change the traffic pattern on Warren Avenue near the old high school. It will change the whole look of the city when you come up Legion Parkway and you would see a brand new modern facility. It should be something to be proud of. It will kind of make a statement that Brockton has indeed entered the 21st century.
You know, when you look at now, where is this campus going to be put for those who aren't aware?
Well, the first consideration has to be the downtown area, because the fire department central fire station serves a specific geographical area, and based on call volume, that's where you need to locate that station. So the old high school lot at the corner of Warren Avenue and either West Elm Street or at the top of Legion Parkway, whichever you wish to call it, has been a prime consideration. But there is a school there, and we will not do anything. Nothing will happen to affect the programs and services and the students at that school. So that would be the first priority, is to, if we're going to go there, to locate them in a better place and in a better facility than they are now, because unfortunately the building they're in is the old high school building, and it's got all sorts of environmental challenges.
Yeah, and I would know it as the old Arnone. I think it might be known now as the Keith School. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Which is kind of odd, because as a kid, I actually went to the previous Keith School, which is now a condominium complex on Warren Avenue. That's where that one stood, right down the street from the Huntington School.
Well, it's a specially designed program that's been very successful. And the principal there, she is top notch. And the mayor and all of us that serve on this committee that meets once a week or once every 2 weeks, we've made a commitment that nothing will happen to displace that program or those kids and the services we provide. Because, you know, you and I can talk about a lot of things, but the education of the children in your community, that's actually the future of the community.
Well, and many folks who may be aware of it is that the Brockton Police Station, where it sits now, has been long thought to be past its prime, and that there needs to be a proper facility, well overdue. And having that combined with a central fire station, a new central fire station, would be key. You'd mentioned that where the old high school used to be there on Warren Avenue, West Elm. Are there other sites that are being proposed, or is that the top of the list right now? And it's a matter of seeing what you can do with the students that are in that building right now.
I would say that's at the top of the list, and I wouldn't want to comment on other sites because to the extent that there might be negotiations needed, that would be inappropriate.
Sure. But let me ask you this again, as somebody who loves the city of Brockton and has been watching what's been going on over the past few years, talk to me about the transformation of the downtown corridor and what's been happening down there with the sites like Prova, having a beer company in downtown Brockton, not just a beer company, but a craft brewery, be a part of, a lower floor while you have residential in the upper. Talk to me about how that's coming along.
Well, I think the first thing that everyone should realize, whether you're in Brockton or out of Brockton, but economic development in any community is kind of like the old building block set that we had as kids. It's a piece here, it's a piece there. And finally, when all of the pieces come together, then you step back and you say, wow, what a transformation. So we have the different building blocks going on. You have the Prova for entertainment. You have the new State Department of Unemployment Assistance Office. You've got the new building that Neighborhood Works is putting in at Frederick Douglass and Main Street.
Yep.
You've got 47 West Elm Street, which Geoffrey Anatole put together, and it's an upscale apartment complex, market rate, that people really enjoy. You've got another project that he may be doing down on Montello Street at the old D'Angelo's sub shop right below the police station. You've got 93 Center Street, the old United Furniture building. You've got the new building that Trinity Development will be putting in that's a companion to what they've already done. It's kind of like the second or third phase of Trinity. So if someone is looking for a switch to be thrown and all of a sudden the downtown has transformed itself, I would caution that let's do the building blocks. Let's follow what the mayor is emphasizing. Build on the past, which started from prior mayors, Mayor Carpenter, and then proceed through this methodically to make sure that when we get to the final end, we're all going to be proud. And that's why I think the public safety facility is going to play a key provision. I mean, right now the police station is east of the railroad tracks, and if you drive down Montello Street or you drive down Main Street, you're probably not even going to notice it. Once that public safety facility moves, if it does go to the old high school location, you're going to have police cruisers constantly coming and going in the downtown area. You've already got state troopers that come and go to the DA's office, and you've got police that go to the district court. I think it's going to throw a whole new complexion on safety and security in the downtown area.
We have a few minutes left in our conversation. Again, we're speaking with Brockton City Councilor, at large counselor and council president, Wynn Falwell is our guest. Anything you want to touch upon, whether it's, how you're going to spend the rest of the summer or looking forward to elections in the fall, whatever you want. You have a couple of moments. What would you like to touch upon before we say goodbye?
Now that we're through the budget and we've got a spending plan, and I think it, as I mentioned earlier, we're on a trajectory for success. I'll back off the reading, the research, and the analysis a little bit. We will have a finance committee meeting on the 19th of July, and then we'll have a council meeting on the 26th of July. We go to a summer schedule where you have one council meeting each month. Obviously, re-election is an important issue. I'll, be putting together all the different people and components to that. I hope it will be an issues-oriented campaign. I hope it is not going to be a divisive campaign where, unfortunately, some people like to pit Brocktonians against new residents that have moved in, certain demographical or racial components of the city against other racial groups in the city. That will be very, very detrimental because it just doesn't reflect well on who we are as a city. I mean, you know, a lot of people forget that we had one of the first African-American school superintendents, Bob Jones.
Yep.
When I was mayor, I had one of the first Hispanic full-time constituent services person in my office. I had the first full-time female city solicitor. The city has done a lot in terms of being diverse. People have now come along and made it appear as though, oh, we've just awakened to that whole issue. And that clearly is not right. High school principals. We've had Jean Marrow, very distinguished high school principal. Sure. Sharon Walder. And so let's stay issues oriented. Those of us who are already in office, you know what? The votes don't make as much difference as maintaining your integrity and remaining positive. If the worst thing that happens is you lose an election, but you've kept your integrity and you focused on issues, you know what? I can live with that. No problem at all.
Yeah, you can't replace your integrity.
Nope.
Once you have decimated your integrity, it's gonna stay with people. You know, it's kind of like a scar. You know, you have that. You have that for life.
That is exactly right. And I think, unfortunately, some politicians like to pander and like to be a demagogue. And I think they sell themselves and they sell their family name short. That's the one thing to remember. My mother used to say, when you leave the house, you represent the whole family and the family name. And I hope public officials everywhere remember that.
Counselor, I want to thank you for joining me. And always being willing to talk about what's good and what's going on in the city of Champions, Brockton, Massachusetts. And I hope that you, if we don't talk until the fall, which I suspect we'll probably have another conversation, but I hope that you enjoy your summer, whether it's at the, as the council president or Grampy.
Well, same to you, your family, and the listeners. Thank you very much, Kevin.
He is Brockton City Councilor, Council President Wynn Falwell. He's been our guest. We're going to step aside just for a moment, but when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
May 26, 2021, a Wednesday, the day of the supermoon. Bob Dart collected his mail, the usual stuff, but this, a thin cardboard box curled up slightly on the edges, painted in faded yellow and red, Daisy Manufacturing Company with a 4-cent cancel stamp, May 26, 1948. 1948? The right name and address, and impossibly inside the complete Buck Rogers atomic pistol and holster set, the Buck Rogers U 238 Atomic Disintegration XZ Pistol, the Pocket Rangers Disintegrator that carries Earth forces to victory. Somehow delivered 73 years late. But will it work? Well, there's the mail truck.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It worked. Broken windshield? We can come to you or you can come to us. Windshield replacement or repair. Insurance pays. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES and be careful with that disintegrator ray. On the 4th.
Tom Baudette here, still leaving the light on for the long-haul trucker. While we were locked down at home, you were out there day and night bringing us what we needed to make it through. And Motel 6 is here to help you make it through. Want to trade a loose load strap and a sore back for a good night's sleep? Yes, you do. Motel 6 has a place just down the road with a clean, comfortable room and a great low rate. You'll know it when you see it. I'm Tom Baudette from Motel 6, and we'll leave the light on for you.
Jay Farner here, CEO of Rocket Mortgage and Rocket Companies. Last year, we saw historically low mortgage interest rates. What you may not know is that interest rates are already starting to increase, and it's likely that trend is only going to continue. Our team of experts is standing by to help you save before rates go up. Don't look back and wish that you had taken action. Call 833-8-ROCKET or visit rocketmortgage.com.
Rocket. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states and MLS ConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
It is time for our final segment of this, a very special Monday Night Talk, of course, your Independence Day or your extended Independence Day edition of this radio program. And what a better way to end our conversations today but to speak with a one-time or former Plymouth County Commissioner, always willing to talk about so many different issues. It doesn't necessarily have to be about county government, but you know what? When we're talking about freedom, when we talk about, I've had many great conversations with one Dan Pallotta about politics and our country and the direction that it's going. So what a better way to punctuate the long sentence that was Monday Night Talk this week than to talk with Dan. Dan, how are you?
How you doing? I'm doing great. I'm enjoying my retirement from politics. Enjoying my retirement from politics.
So I have to ask you. So I hear that you right now are safely tucked away in a very remote part of the Commonwealth. I think you're somewhere, maybe the western part of the state, maybe northwest part. Can you confirm or deny this?
I will not confirm where I am. Where I am, as I'm trying to get away from the people that I once governed.
I hate to tell you this, but I think they're actively pinging your cell phone right now. So resistance.
No. I mean, I'm in New York a lot, and I'm in Western Mass a lot, and. So I'm in both of those places a lot, and I my heart is always with Plymouth County. I believe in Plymouth County, and I believe in what the Pilgrims essentially started, which nobody seems to remember. All the good that was done by the Pilgrims, they want to focus on the Indians and the indigenous people that were here. But I tell everybody that they should read Mayflower, the book Mayflower. I think it was Philbrick, because it's a wonderful presentation of the day-to-day life in the first 80 years. And it really shaped the way we are today. I mean, the establishment of the town clerk came from the Pilgrims. You know, the first jury trial in the United States, something we cherish is a jury trial, came from the Pilgrims. So there's a lot of things that, you know, the little puzzle pieces that got us to where we are today that I think people are forgetting. And you know, we're in this scratch ticket mentality where we need instant gratification. We forget the sacrifices of the multitudes of generations that have brought us forward with each generations.
We had
slavery 150 years ago. All right. Well, look how far we've come. Is it perfect? No. Does it get better every day? Absolutely.
I was going to ask if the Pilgrims had anything to do with the formation of the Plymouth County Commissioners, or maybe had one of their group members as a county commissioner. But I don't want to.
The formation of the county as a governmental unit happened in 1685 with Bristol, Norfolk, I think Suffolk, all passed by the legislature of the great and general court. At that time, the Bay Colony and the Plymouth Colony were becoming the colony of Massachusetts, and the counties were established.
How important to you is Independence Day? How important is our independence as a nation, as a person, as a people?
I'm guilty of this too. I don't think we reflect enough on it. I don't think we reflect about the guts it took for the founding fathers to separate from the monarchy. Not an easy thing to do. when you don't have a country, a currency, anything to go against the mighty might of the then Royal Navy and the Royal Army. And so I don't think we appreciate it. I think we've become a nation that believes it's just a holiday. Great, it's July 4th, it's a holiday, there's fireworks. We celebrate with fireworks. And I think we're all guilty of this. I think we've lost our roots when it comes to important holidays, Labor Day, the Thanksgiving, and certainly July 4th.
Do you feel as though that corporate America has played a role in how our, you know, the sacred days that we set aside to celebrate, whether it's the, you know, the American worker, whether it's our freedoms as a country, that they somehow play a role in you know, monetizing a day that's supposed to be reflective of service and of, you know, of our certain freedoms?
Yes. I think when we have a holiday like July 4th, everything should be closed. Everything. Sure. I do. I think everything should be closed. When I was the moderator in the town of Hanover, I had asked one or two meetings in a row the head of the recreation committee, whom I appointed, to fertilize the fields the day before town meeting, so they'd be closed for 3 days, so that there'd be no distractions and would get a better attendance at town meeting. And it worked. Once you took away the man-made distractions, the general person wants to participate. But it's distractions that get in the way. The distraction of shopping, the distraction of the fact that you have a t-ball game, or the distraction of whatever, gets in the way of the civic portion that is so lacking in our society today.
You mentioned a key word there, civics. Do you feel that that's the one thing that our country lacks? Let's start here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Civics seems to be a kind of a lost piece of information that folks I don't embrace or aren't necessarily willing to want to make a part of the mental Rolodex as the importance of civics.
Civics is lost in the public schools. Again, we used to teach government in Hanover. The moderator had a government week, and we had each branch of the government come in, whether it was the planning board or the selectmen or school committee, to explain to the children, you know, what it was all about. We wrapped it up with town meeting. And I will tell you one time that we had a police chief that was arresting kids left and right for zero tolerance, and the kids were all upset about it. And, you know, they're 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds. And I stood up there before the class and I said, look, you have the power to change this. You can go to town meeting and take the police chief's salary away. Just stand up and amend the budget when the budget comes. And if you have the majority of the vote, you can take his salary away. And they all said, oh, come on, come on, come on. And one of the kids said, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And of course, so here I am at the town meeting the following Monday, basically wetting myself, hoping that kid doesn't stand up. But you know what? I ran into that kid about 5 years later, and he reminded me of what we was taught, that they do indeed have the power as long as they participate. Thank God he didn't do that day. But it was an example of the one person, one vote, which came directly from the Pilgrims and beyond, that is so important, that is lacking. I think the schools and society has become so polarized with nonsense, critical race theory nonsense, that they're not teaching history. There's nothing ashamed about history. There's good history and bad history. You got to teach it all. You know, it would be like Germany not teaching the Holocaust. You have to. You have to teach your young what happened in the past so they don't repeat the past. We're trying to pretend like 1620 didn't happen, that the country started in 1619 or whatever that new thing is, and it's crazy. You know, the schools should go back to reading, writing, arithmetic, and history, and they should mandate history, and they should start and get history through these kids. I think it's real important. It's amazing if you talk to any naturalized citizen. You'll find that they have a greater appreciation for the United States than we that were born here do. They've come from a place that's far different than we are, and they really appreciate the fact that they can speak and they can vote and they can do these things that they couldn't do. We take them for granted. So if we don't teach generation after generation how important that is, there's going to come a time where the majority takes that importance away.
Our guest for this, the closing segment of Monday Night Talk, Dan Pallotta, a good friend and also a former Plymouth County Commissioner Chair, and has also served so many different roles on the South Shore, whether it's appointed or elected. And so he has a wealth of information. And as somebody, he is a student. I would say that he is a student of government, student of party politics and as to how our country ticks, and you may or may not agree with his vision, but again, the idea is this is not a matter of agreeing with people who have differing opinions. It's understanding, and at the end of the day, you can either agree with someone's opinion or agree to disagree, and then move on to the next conversation that may be on deck. Well, when we look at our freedoms, you had kind of mentioned about that, you know, the things had to be done in order to kind of have folks be a little bit more focused in on, you know, things that are going on in Hanover that particular time. Do you feel that sometimes that our freedoms get in the way of what's important?
I think the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, which we know is the Bill of the Rights, can sometimes be troublesome. They can sometimes cause problem. They can allow you to spew hate. But they're essential. What I always remember at town meeting is whenever you had someone that was spewing hate, they would eventually talk themselves into a corner, and everyone would vote against them. But you allowed them to speak. Today we're in this cancel culture silence thing with these conglomerates that are literally determining who can and can't speak and what subjects can and can't be spoken upon on electronic media is a huge detriment to the United States long term. Huge, undescribably huge. And I'm not just saying President Trump or conservatives. Someone's arbitrating your freedom. Your freedom, which is guaranteed by the United States Constitution, is being arbitrated, and that's bad.
Talk to me about the Constitution and its important role, and is it something that you fear could fall by the wayside depending on those folks who are allowed to govern us?
So the Constitution has begun to fall by the wayside. You know, I'm one of those people that believe that the 2020 election, as a Republican, the most ballots were for Joe Biden. More importantly, Joe Biden got the requisite amount of electoral votes by each state. But there was a smattering of states that changed their rules outside of the Constitution long before the election that should have been challenged by the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, for that matter, that didn't happen. And, of course, the challenge came after the election, and the Supreme Court didn't take the challenge on Pennsylvania. In my opinion, is they didn't take the challenge because there was no remedy. I think if the same case came today, they would arbitrate that case. They just did last week with Arizona, or a few days ago with Arizona, on some issues relating to elections. I think you'll see a lot more of those. I think the Constitution was eroded tremendously during the pandemic, and may have been necessary for public health, but a lot of those erosions have not been restored. And that's really troubling for me.
Is there any attempt that can be made to save this information or save the Constitution from any further erosion? And I'll ask you this, and again, and I'm asking you in a nonpartisan, and I know this may not be the easiest thing for you to answer, but I think the biggest issue that faces our nation, especially when it comes to those who govern us down in the Capitol, down in D.C., is that it's become a win at all cost mentality. And there, instead of there being a, hey, we should work together in unity for the betterment of our country moving forward, not necessarily as to racking up a point or being able to have an upper hand or an advantage over said party or within your said party.
The polarization, you're talking about polarization is really what you're talking about.
I am.
So the polarization is a big problem. I don't see that being solved until the current generation of leaders are gone. It's just like the county farm. The county farm was a polarized issue between the commissioners and the sheriff. And I don't think you'll see super duper cooperation between the two until both parties are gone. Well, half the parties are gone on one side, and when the other party's gone, you'll find that the sheriff's department and the commissioners get along well, and the farm will go as designed by our lease that we created. But it takes generations. It took us generations to get where we are. It's going to take us generations to get us out of the mess that we're in. But I do think we'll get back to bipartisanship. I do. I just think that the current leadership is just is not good. And that's not one-sided. That's two-sided. I firmly believe. Had we had a truthful press and an open and free speech environment, the election results might have been different in this past election. Maybe not on the presidential side, but certainly on the House and Senate side. I think that polarization has crept into the erosion of the freedom of the press and the right to free speech, and that's a really, really big problem. I mean, I'm on a back and forth with the assistant treasurer Jeff Welch and the current treasurer Tom O'Brien, who are both diehard progressive Democrats, and we go at it all the time. I would go out to dinner with them tomorrow. We are certainly civil to each other. That's missing, and that's missing at all levels. Greg Hanley and I are on the opposite spectrums. We served 8 years together, had a smattering of votes in 8 years that weren't identical. We got things done for the betterment of the people. That's not happening at the state or the federal level, the state level, because they don't have to because of the majorities. But on the federal level, they have to. And I think you're seeing the beginning of that, of going back to normal, with the inability of the majority right now to be able to pass the stimulus bill. They can't get it done.
And speaking with Dan Pallotta, he, of course, referencing Plymouth County Governor, and also Plymouth County government and his dealings within it and within the framework. And again, I'm going to ask you this question in retrospect, and it's kind of a rhetorical question, because we don't really have a the real answer. But at the founding fathers who authored the Declaration of Independence and signed it, and authored the Constitution, which is supposed to be the very fabric that our government is supposed to operate in. If they were to look at how our government is running, whether it's, you know, on the federal level, the state level, the county level, what do you think that they would say? Would they say anything positive? Do you feel that they would be critical that it's kind of taken a different road, a different path than envisioned?
I think the founding fathers would be horrified at how powerful the federal government became. The federal government was to do defense and defense only. The states were to be individual provinces that could run on their own. And I think they'd still be happy with New England, or the majority of New England that still have the open town meeting. If you go around the country, everything looks the same, except for in New England. New England's quaint villages, and that's 100% related to the fact that you need the people to vote yes to get something done. And if they vote no, you have to wait a year. And developers that want to put in a Walmart have, again, that scratch ticket mentality, so they don't wait the year. So over time, the little towns and villages have retained themselves. Towns that have become cities have not retained themselves, because a city council can be swayed and can vote, 52 weeks of the year. So I think they'd be still happy with that. I think they'd be upset with how big the federal government has become and how intrusive it has become on the individual.
Interesting. That's definitely an interesting take on what you think. Now, but do you feel that your take on it is from a partisan point of view, or do you feel that you're being bipartisan about it?
Well, I'm usually not bipartisan, but I like to study the other side's position. The other side wants a big government. Our side doesn't. So there's a diabolic opposite opinion there. But I do think that, your question was, what would the founding fathers think? I mean, all you gotta do is read the Federalist Papers and you'll see that they'd be horrified, because they argued these things. They argued how much rights the state should have, and where should the Bill of Rights go when they were doing the first 10 amendments for the Constitution? How far is too far? How far is not far enough? And I think they hit a home run ball. I mean, the United States is the most stable country, provided that we don't put ourselves in so much debt that we go under. The United States is the most stable country in the world in the past 240 years. I mean, think about it. We don't have coups and revolutions. We go in a different direction every 4 years or 8 years, and correct what some perceive are mistakes and others don't. But it's a relatively stable checks and balances that they created. And when you rock that apple cart on checks and balances, like packing the court or things like that, it's going to be problematic for the United States long term.
So as we get ready to close out this segment, and it went fast, it really did. we probably could have talked for yet another half hour.
I could have talked for another 2 hours.
I know you could have. What would you say in closing your hope is for the future of the independence of our country and for the continued growth of our country when it comes to our freedoms?
So what I think should happen at the beginning of every congressional session is that they should hug each other and recognize that you do the debate, you take the vote, and you move on to the next issue. You said it, you know, there's this one-upmanship that goes on now that has got to end. And I think it's going to end. I think the American people are smart enough to know that corrections are going to be needed in 2022 and 2024. And I think you'll see corrections. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to go Republican or Democrat. It means that it has to go central Republican and central Democrat. Right now, you went through a very disruptive 4 years with phony investigations. And now you have a president that advertised himself as being centrist, who's not. And the American people don't like to be duped by either side. And I think they'll correct it. I have always believed an educated town meeting always makes the right decision. And I think an educated public will always make the right decision federally. The question will be whether we can educate the public in the current atmosphere where things are being censored. That's the key. It goes back to the First Amendment and freedom of the press.
Dan, I want to thank you as always for being a great guest. And I think we should probably revisit on a regular basis, talking about government. And regardless of what branch of government, whether it's county government, whether it's state government, whether it's, you know, what's going on with the federal government, I think we should sit down and talk for half an hour and break it down.
I'd love to come anytime, as you know, not because I think that people out there want to hear my opinion, but I do think it's important to hear another opinion. And I think that's, again, we have to be tolerant of other people's views. One side's not tolerant of other views, and they have to be tolerant. They don't have to agree with them. They don't have to vote for them, but they have to be tolerant of them. They have to listen and say, okay, I got it. I tell everybody to read the book called Republican Like Me, which was the a great book written in the context of Black Like Me that we read as a kid, that was written by the head of NPR, who's a diehard Democrat, who came home one day and saw that there was a banner on his street that said, you know, everyone's welcome, LGBTQZ, you know, except Republicans. And he didn't like it. So he became a Republican for a year and went around and pretended to be a Republican. And he wrote a book about it. No, he did not become a Republican, so you don't have to worry, he was converted. But he has a great vision of what it's like to see the other side. And I think that if people read that book, would have a far better debate.
Well, it looks like we're plumb out of time. We want to thank you, Dan, for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
And we want to thank you for joining us for your Independence Day, your 4th of July. That's all the program that we have. Hope you enjoyed it. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.